The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this October 16th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7. Can I start by saying this? I know people around here hate it. I know you do. I know October starts to get a little chilly. But man, I love it. I loved when I walked outside this morning and it was 45 degrees. Oh, reminds me of Ohio. Man, it's a beautiful day here in the Auburn Opelika area. Lots to get to on the show today. Wednesdays are a lot of fun. Got a couple of really good guests that are going to be on the show with us today. We'll have Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 as Georgia gets ready to have what is one of the biggest games of the year so far in college football for the second time. That's right, Georgia as the fifth-ranked team in college football. They get ready to take on the number one team in the country, the Texas Longhorns. That game is in Austin, and very excited to have that game coming up. We're going to talk all about it here with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 coming up in about 30 minutes or so. So Jordan will join us then. Again, Georgia, the fifth-ranked team in the country. Their only loss on the season was to that Alabama team who has since lost to Vanderbilt. But Texas looks to be unbeatable for now. So we'll get to talk to Jordan about that coming up in just a little bit. Plus what we learned from SEC Basketball Media Day yesterday up in Birmingham. So all of that coming up with him at 2:30. And then it's Double D Wednesday. That's right. Daryl Dappert from Locked On Auburn will be joining us at 3:15 from 3:45. We're going to talk all things Auburn athletics. Coming out of the bye week for Auburn football, what can we expect versus Missouri? What should we expect versus Missouri? And then some basketball conversation as well. So that's coming up in hour number two. Jordan coming up at 2:30. In between, before, after, and around, the phone lines are open. 334-321-1390. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about on this Wednesday afternoon? It can be football, it can be basketball, it can be pretty much anything you want it to be. I'm open, I'm all ears here on the Wednesday edition of the show. 334-321-1390. That's the phone line number to call in and be a part of the show. You can also shoot me a text if you want to. 334-784-1067. That is the on the line text box number, so you can get in on that if you would like to. And have to start today. We have to start with the news that we got just a little bit ago, right? Just a little bit ago, not very long since the rule has been applied. The Dan Lanning rule, the Dan Lanning effect has taken place for what was one of the most genius plays we've seen in the history of college football. And yes, I said that. I did. And I think it was because Dan Lanning at Oregon found a loophole in the rule book, and he used it to his advantage, and he used it to beat Ohio State. He did. He used it to beat Ohio State. And we told you, we talked about this on Monday and yesterday, did Christian Griffin and I. We talked about this and said, the NCAA is going to make a rule change on this. They're going to come out and say something about this. And sure enough, they did. The rule has been changed, or there's a new interpretation is what they're calling this. They changed it. That's what they did. They changed it. We're not interpreting it a different way. We are changing the way that it's applied. That's what we did here. And so, we know how it all went down, right? We know that there were 12 men on the field. We have since found out that was on purpose because I don't think Dan Lanning could sit on it anymore. I don't think Dan Lanning could stand it. He had to tell the world that he did it on purpose, that they practiced it. And I just don't think he could. He couldn't hold it in any longer, right? It's like when you buy your significant other something, or you have something you want to tell your friends, or you just something that you just can't stand it anymore. Some people are terrible at that, and it seemed like Dan Lanning fell into that category. He said, "Yeah, we did that on purpose." Well, the 12 men on the field, they took the yards, but they also stopped the play. And they ran time off the clock. That has been changed. Here is, this was according to Ralph D. Russo earlier today. He says, the rules interpretation handed down by the NCAA to close the loophole in the illegal substitution foul that Oregon used against Ohio State. I'm not going to read the whole statement, but I am going to read the short new interpretation of the rule. After the two-minute timeout, okay, reading from this right now, word for word. After the two-minute timeout, in either half, if the defense commits a substitution foul and 12 or more players are on the field and participate in a down, officials will penalize the defense for the foul, and then, here's where it gets dicey, at the option of the offended team, reset the clock back to the time displayed at the snap. The game clock will then restart on the next snap. If the 12th defender was attempting to exit, like running off the field, but was still on the field at the snap and had no influence on the play, then the normal substitution penalty would be enforced with no clock adjustment. What are your thoughts on that? What do you think? How do you feel about this new change, the new interpretation, the new application is the way we should say that. This only applies after the two-minute warning in college football, first and second half, two-minute timeout, two-minute warning, whatever you want to call it. In either half, if the defense commits a substitution foul, so they have too many players on the field, and they participate in the down. That's a big part of this. The officials will penalize the defense for the foul. And then the offense gets to choose if they want that clock to go, or they want that time to go back on the clock. I don't know why you wouldn't. Maybe you just want to get to the half. I don't know. Maybe it's fourth down and you don't want to punt it away. And you just say, yeah, we're good. Or maybe you do have to punt it away, but you don't want them to have more time, right? Maybe they stopped you on third down. Now it's fourth down. This sounds familiar, doesn't it? Then they stopped you on fourth down, and you're thinking, oh, we could punt this away with 2 seconds, or we could punt it away with 10 seconds, or we could kick a field goal with 2 seconds, or we could kick it with 10, and then they'd have a play. You see what I'm saying here? Like, there are reasons to not put the time back on the clock. But the thing is, the offense now has the choice rather than it being what it was before where it just automatically came off. The offense can now decide, do we want that time to be put back on the clock? And then the clock will not start until the next play begins. So the clock will stop and you can do whatever you need to do and then it will start on the next snap. Says if they're trying to get off the field and they don't have an influence on the play, then just the normal substitution penalty, just the yards enforced with no clock adjustment. This is pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. NCAA moved quicker on this than they've done anything, ever, ever. It's probably because Ohio State was involved. But they moved pretty quick on this. And they've made the changes, the necessary changes, I think, to what was a loophole that Dan Lanning found. And while this is all great, I still believe, as I told you on Monday and as I told you yesterday, I still believe this should be blown dead immediately. Why run the play? If you're going to go through all the trouble of determining whether this extra player had an impact on the play or not, had an influence on the play or not, then you're going to go across the field and talk to the offensive head coach and say, hey, do you want to put the time back on the clock? Do you want that on there? Or do you want to leave it off? Oh, you want it back. Okay, well, let's go back and see how much time we got to put back on the clock. It's going to stop the whole game. It's going to slow it down. And it's going to be extra steps that just aren't necessary. You're still going to get the yards. And then you're going to play the down over again. So why are we going through all these extra steps? Just stop the play. Stop the game. And say, nope. Extra man, boom, play's dead, 5 yards, no clock, move on. That's it. If any time was running off before the play started, that would remain. But as soon as the snap is made, clock stops, you can put that second back on if that's what it takes, give them the yards, no decision made, and we move on. Regardless, there you go. The rule has been changed, and the Dan Lanning rule is now in place in college football. Congratulations to him for finding it, executing it, admitting it, and then getting it shut down. So there you go. We'll see when that comes into effect here in the recent weeks of college football. And speaking of college football in recent weeks, we'll have a lot of games coming up this weekend. And you know how we roll on Wednesdays around here. We flip the page to the next week. We start talking about what's coming up this weekend. And here we go again. Right here we go again with so many great games on the schedule, with so many huge games on the schedule. And I think like a cheetah in the bushes, right out in the wherever they live, there's some hiding in the weeds here. There are some really good games that I think are going to sneak up and be really, really good that people just aren't talking about. I think there are some of those out there, sure. The weekend is highlighted by Alabama and Tennessee, third Saturday in October. We're talking Alabama-Tennessee, number 7 versus number 11 in Knoxville. Both teams trying to bounce back just in different ways. Bama trying to bounce back off of a escaped win at home over South Carolina after trying to bounce back versus against Vanderbilt. Tennessee is trying to, I guess, bounce back from, well, actually, I stand corrected. I stand correct. Both teams are in the exact same situation. I was wrong. Both teams, now that I think about it here live, Tennessee and Alabama are in the exact same situation. Both had losses 2 weeks ago in games that they were expected to win and win by a lot. Both were double-digit favorites, Alabama against Vanderbilt and Tennessee against Arkansas. Both went on the road and both lost. Both teams then returned home against teams that they were big favorites over. Alabama versus South Carolina, Tennessee versus Florida. I don't remember the exact spreads on those, but I guarantee they were favorites. Tennessee, see if I can still find it. Tennessee was a 13.5-point favorite against Florida. And as I look at it, right now I'll find it for you in just a second. Alabama was a favorite over South Carolina. What was that spread that they played the Gamecocks with last week where they had to squeak it out? And I mean barely get by the Gamecocks. That spread ended up being 19.5. So there you go. All right? Double-digit favorites on the road the week before, they lost. Come back home, they're double-digit favorites, and they almost lost. So Tennessee and Alabama are in the exact same boat, rowing down the river at the exact same time. Who's going to emerge? Who's going to keep their season alive? Yep, just got the text. Thank you. Tennessee 14.5, Bama 20.5. Regardless, double-digit favorites, right? So they're rowing down the river. They're looking at one another. And somebody's going to sink, and somebody's going to swim. One team's going to keep their season alive this Saturday. The other might just be eliminated from the college football playoff. Tennessee has the advantage here. It's in Knoxville on Saturday afternoon. So that's a big game, right? That's a huge, huge game that's taking place in the SEC in college football. That's highlighting the weekend. Michigan-Illinois, I think, is highlighting the weekend. Should it? I don't know. I'll leave that up to you. But it is a top 25 game. I don't believe it should be, but it is. LSU-Arkansas, I think, should highlight the weekend. Because as crazy as it sounds, Arkansas being at 4-2, I still believe has everything in front of them. Given the losses that they have, the win that they have over Tennessee a week ago, and the schedule that lays in front of them. They still have four top 25 teams, including two top 10 teams, and LSU this weekend and number one Texas later on in the year. Arkansas is very much alive, folks. And then, of course, the big one, the one that we're all curious on, that we're all going to be watching, and we're going to talk with Jordan Hill about coming up in about 20 minutes, is number five Georgia at number one Texas. We're all looking at it. Texas favored by 5. At home against Georgia, 6:30 on ABC. But I do believe that there are some sneaky good games here inside the top 25. I think SMU-Stanford could be a good game. I think Stanford's going to give SMU a little run on Saturday night. I think Kansas State and West Virginia is going to be a good one. Kansas State favored by 3 there in Morgantown. I think there are so many fascinating games on this schedule that just might be overlooked. I think Nebraska and Indiana is going to be a good game. That's 11 a.m. on Fox. The same exact time that Auburn and Missouri play. And I think this is a sneaky good game. I really do. I think Auburn and Missouri is a sneaky good game in college football this weekend that the casual fan will not care about at all. A Missouri team that has just fallen flat on their face, right? They beat, or they got destroyed by A&M. They beat UMass a week ago. Okay, cool. Who cares? Auburn, from the outside perspective, oh, they're 2-4. Did they even play last week? I don't know. Ah, we forgot about them. Psh, I ain't worried about it. Missouri's favored. They'll win. Nobody's worried about this game. But I think it's going to be really, really fascinating. I really do. And that's just talking about teams that are ranked. There are a lot more games that don't involve ranked teams that are going to be fun to watch this weekend, too. Are we going to get the magic and the late-game heroics that we've seen the last couple of weeks? I sure hope so. I really do. I sure hope so. There's going to be at least one somewhere that's going to go crazy this weekend. And that's what makes college football so awesome. 334-321-1390. Let's go ahead and take a break here in hour number one. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. That is the number. You can also shoot me a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067. We continue with the Wednesday edition of On the Line after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, 334-321-1390. That's the phone line number to get you through to me. This is the first time, or I guess the last time for a little bit, that you'll be able to get in if you want to. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 is coming up in just a few minutes. We're going to talk to him about Georgia football, a little Georgia basketball as well. Since SEC Basketball Media Day was yesterday up in Birmingham, and of course the Dogs, in terms of football, have the biggest game of the weekend when they travel to Austin to take on the number one team in the land, the Texas Longhorns. And so he joins us at 2:30, and then Daryl Dapridge will be with us at 3:15. So keep that in mind. Speaking of basketball and SEC Media Day yesterday, all the coaches were there. Yes, all 16 of them, and they all brought two players with them. And so I'm not good at math, but that's a lot of people that have to start talking and doing interviews and answer questions and things like that. And while I didn't get a chance to go in person, I have been able to read and listen and hear a lot of what was said thanks to people that did go. And the thing that sticks out to me for Auburn is something that maybe a lot of people didn't hit on. I saw a few people that did, and I'm glad that they did, but it's something that I want to go in on here in the next few minutes before we get to our bottom of the hour break. Bruce Pearl and Denver have now talked about openly, and I say admitted, but when I feel like when you say admitted, it's like they did something wrong. You're admitting you did something wrong. This was more of recognizing and informing a change with Auburn basketball. And the change that they're making is Denver Jones, who played a lot of two guard last year, played a lot of shooting guard, right? Because there was some kid playing point guard that we were idolizing over and hoping that he was going to become something and didn't, so he went to Tuscaloosa. And so now Denver Jones, who's back for another season at Auburn, Bruce Pearl said yesterday he's going to be playing the majority of point guard. He's going to be playing the majority of point guard this upcoming season for Auburn basketball. And for those of you, and this number is growing by the day, I feel like, but those of you who have been here for a little while, those of you that were with me last year during basketball season, do you remember what I was begging for? Do you remember what I continued to ask for during the struggles of Aiden Holloway? I said, put Denver Jones at the one. Play Denver as a point guard. Because he was more of a floating point guard, I guess. I mean, he played a lot of the two. But he then, as the season went on and Aiden's struggles continued, he started to see some time at the point. And man, the offense played great. The Auburn offense in basketball was really, really solid with Denver Jones playing the one. And he was also a fantastic defender on other point guards. He would lock down shooting guards all day. Then you'd put him on an elite point guard, and heck, half the time he got the assignment anyway, but just going one-on-one with another point guard, Denver Jones was him. He was it. He was better than the people he went up against. And I begged and begged and begged. Somebody go back and find the clips, man. There's more than one, I promise you that. Of me asking for Denver Jones to play the point guard position. And Bruce Pearl told us he's going to do that. Him and Denver decided it this offseason that it's best for the team for him to be the point guard. And the terminology that Bruce Pearl used is he's now the quarterback of this team. He said Bruce had a really good quote talking about Denver now being the point, and he says, I don't have to work to get the point. Or he said, you're not supposed to put work in to get the quarterback the ball. Now I don't have to. And what he means by that is before you have to run sets and add an extra motion in an offensive play call to get the basketball in the hands of Denver Jones. But if he's the point guard and he's the one bringing it up the floor, you don't have to do that anymore. You don't have to call a play to get the quarterback the basketball. And what that also means is that he thinks Denver Jones is the orchestrator of the offense. He is the one that commands it, that starts it, that gives them the best chance to be successful. And I totally agree. I totally agree with that. I think Denver's smart. I think he's skilled. I think he's athletic. I think he's got everything he needs to be a successful point guard in the SEC, and now you're going to see it. Especially now that you bring in JP Pegues, you've got another two. And I'd rather Pegues be at that spot than Denver Jones, because I'd rather Denver play the one. And I think that's really going to open things up this year. I think Auburn's offense on the basketball floor is going to be a lot of fun to watch. You've got, 10 seniors on this team? I think that's right. And with Denver being the one that is going to make everything go, I trust him a lot. I trust his shot making. I trust his passing, his decision making. I trust all of that with Denver. Aiden Holloway, I didn't. We were hoping it would work. We were hoping it was going to be good, but he just never flourished here. There's no concern with Denver Jones. This dude's going to be a legit point guard in the SEC. One of the best, in my opinion. I'm just glad Bruce Pearl listens to the show and decided to take my advice. I'm glad he decided to do that. I'm kidding. Great decision, though, Bruce. Proud of you, my man. All right, we're 30 minutes into hour number one, and when we come back, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 will join us, talking Georgia football as they prepare for Texas and what we learned from Georgia basketball yesterday as well. That's all here. Coming up next.
On the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goertz, and always look forward to talking to this guy on Wednesday afternoons. We get updates on everything going on in Georgia athletics. He writes for dogs247.com. Jordan Hill joins us on the phone lines now. Jordan, great to hear from you, my man. Hope things are going well over in Athens.
Absolutely. Getting ready for a big game in Austin on Saturday night. So looking forward for the chance to go out to Texas, watch a top five matchup, and super excited to talk a little ball with you.
I was going to say, don't disappoint me. Tell me you're making the trip to Austin.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yes. I knew that they're going to have a chance to get Texas barbecue. I mean, you do that and then, you know, throw a game on top of it. How can you say no?
Look, I made the cardinal sin when we went to Dallas for SEC Media Days. I did not get any Texas barbecue, but it's because the SEC fed us every meal. I didn't have time to go get any barbecue.
Yeah. It's easy to get caught up in some of the other stuff. And truth be told, I don't remember if I got anything in Dallas, but I think I knew that trip to Austin was coming, so I held out.
Yeah, well, that's going to be a lot of fun, and what an atmosphere that's going to be coming up this weekend. A top five matchup for Georgia once again. They get the number one team in the country, the Texas Longhorns. And we're going to talk a lot about that game and what it represents and what it means and all of that stuff. But I want to talk about what Georgia did this past week when they returned home. They had Mississippi State coming in. This was a game, Jordan, where obviously don't have to tell you, heavy, heavy favorites were Georgia, and it was similar for Texas when they were playing Mississippi State. I felt off and wrong that an SEC team was favored over another SEC team by 30 plus points, and give Mississippi State credit, they hung around, they kept it close, but the Dogs do get the win 41-31.
Definitely. It's one of those games where I think Georgia comes out of it happy, obviously, that they won the game, but understanding there's things to clean up. And I think the biggest concern is this defense, you know, and what I think is most frustrating for Kirby Smart and this staff is they were in the third quarter up 34-10 and had multiple chances to get off the field and basically have a chance to put the game on ice. Chris Cole, a freshman linebacker, gets a defensive pass interference on 3rd and 8. Mississippi State keeps the drive going, and then Chaz Chambliss goes from nearly having a sack to end the drive to he pulls the quarterback's helmet off and gets a face mask, and that extends the drive, and Mississippi State goes down and scores a touchdown, and all of a sudden, you know, it winds up being a four-quarter game. The big concern coming out of this game for Georgia is the secondary really struggled against Mississippi State, and the game took a really odd turn, and I think Michael Van Buren, Mississippi State's quarterback, deserves a lot of credit. He was really struggling throwing the ball, and Mississippi State tried to lean on the run early, couldn't get anything going, and they basically said, all right, Michael, you got to make some plays, and he did. He had a great second half, threw for, I believe, 190 passing yards after halftime. Understanding that Mississippi State's rebuilding, and they deserve a lot of credit, but the offense they're going to face this week in Texas significantly better and with better weapons. So I think this entire week has been about getting this secondary up for the challenge. Georgia's been saying all the right things, but they got to play their best game of the year if they're going to be able to go into Austin and get a hard-fought win.
Carson Beck, 36 of 48, threw for nearly 500 yards, had three touchdowns, but did have those two interceptions, and that was what plagued them early against Alabama. Just couldn't, really didn't have enough time to come back and get the win and seal the win. They took the lead, of course, but we know how that ended. And so is there any concern with Carson Beck in terms of him turning the football over? Because you can't do that against Texas. Their offense is way too powerful.
I think they definitely understand that they can't have two turnovers. Now, I will say the first of those turnovers, kind of out of Carson's control, got tipped at the line and intercepted. Second one definitely was on Carson, sort of forced the throw to Lawson Lucky in the end zone and had a defender draped over him and picked it. Carson really wanted a defensive hold but didn't get the call. But, no, I mean, I think on the whole they feel good about Carson. 459 passing yards in that Mississippi State game. This offense is a little more pass-heavy than I expected, and I'm really intrigued to see just how well Georgia runs the ball against Texas. Texas has done a very good job stopping the run. Oklahoma was just a little bit over 2 yards a carry in that loss last Saturday, and I feel like Georgia's key in this Texas game is in getting Trevor Etienne involved in some form or fashion. It might not be a ton of carries, but he's been dangerous catching the ball out of the backfield. I think they have to get Etienne involved because he's one of the better players. I think they feel good about Carson. I think they understand some of those turnovers, even that Alabama game, weren't totally on Carson. But he's definitely got to make good decisions because you cannot give away possessions in a game like this.
Georgia and Texas doing battle this weekend, getting to that in just a moment. As we really get to what I've said about the halfway point, right, Jordan? This Georgia team, 5-1 overall, 6 games to go at Texas, Florida in the neutral site game, at Ole Miss, Tennessee, UMass, and Georgia Tech. I mean, is Kirby Smart satisfied with what we've seen up to this point? And then, not more importantly, but what you hear more of, are fans satisfied with what we've seen to this point?
Well, starting with Kirby, I don't know that Kirby's ever satisfied. I think if Georgia was undefeated, he would be satisfied. And he hit on something on Monday that I think is a very good summation of this Georgia team to this point. He said that he didn't feel like they have played a complete game this year, and I think he hit the nail on the head. I mean, they have had games where their defense looked great, like the Clemson game, the Kentucky game. There's been other games where the offense really showed out. You know, really, that second half against Alabama, getting back in the game, the offense had a lot to do with it. And then this past week, Mississippi State, they threw the ball really well. So it's trying to put a complete game together. Now, the fans, I can go ahead and tell you, are not satisfied, but that's sort of where the standard is right now at Georgia, having won 2 of the last 3 national titles. They expect more. They want to see this team rebound from a really tough-to-swallow loss at Alabama. You know, it's going to be fascinating just to see how this plays out. You know, when you think about the bigger picture, you know, I think Georgia could afford to lose this game at Texas and still make the college football playoff, but that probably means winning the rest of your game. So Georgia obviously wants to go into this game and win it, and they want to come out on top. But they have to understand, too, if they were to drop this game, you have virtually no margin for error going forward.
I got to ask, did it make Georgia fans feel better or worse after losing, or after they lost to Alabama and then watching Alabama lose to Vanderbilt the next week?
You know, I think, honestly, I'd say it's kind of 50-50. I think there is a, you know, enjoying seeing a team that has dominated and, frankly, dominated Georgia lose like that. But I do think there's a piece of it of, man, we blew our opportunity. And I think that that's kind of one of the takeaways from how Georgia dominated that second half. You know, again, I do think you have to say Alabama tried to go conservative. You know, we're trying not to turn the ball over and trying to be smart with the ball in that second half. But I think it is fair to say that Georgia should have come out of that game and said, look at the opportunity we had. You know, if we had not had practically as bad of a start to that game on both sides of the ball as we did, we very well could have won this game. So I do think that there are Georgia fans that were not sad to see that loss at Vanderbilt and was definitely rooting for South Carolina in Bryant Denny last week. But I do think that there's a large contingent that say, look, you know, this is not the Alabama team of old. We should have been able to win this game. And you look at those mistakes and the points Georgia left out on the field, I think that it can be very frustrating as well.
He writes for Dogs247.com, covering the Georgia Bulldogs each and every day. And he joins us on Wednesdays here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Jordan Hill joining us on the phone lines. And there's so many question marks from a lot of fans outside of Athens about what this Georgia team is. How good are they? Can they get back and be another contender for the national title? And we're going to find out Saturday night, 6:30 in Austin, Texas, when they take on the number one ranked Longhorns. What is your evaluation of what Texas is, what they're bringing into this game, and what they've done so far?
I think they're really dangerous. Now, this will definitely be Texas's biggest game yet. I would say that the biggest to date was that game at Michigan, and we've seen that this Michigan team, especially that Michigan offense, not as powerful as the one from the year before. But, you know, I kind of go to what Kirby had to say this week, and obviously he's going to hype up the opponent and talk highly of them, but I mean, he said that this Texas team reminds him of some of Georgia's best teams the last few years, where you're kind of looking for a weakness on any side of the ball and you just can't find one. You know, I've been really impressed with how they've run the ball after losing two running backs in the preseason. Obviously, getting Quinn Ewers back last week, very, very big for them. And then, I mean, their defense, I believe they're number one in the nation, only giving up a little over 6 points a game. It's a very dominant team, and it's one of those where when we talk about turnovers, you just can't afford to give possessions away against a team of this magnitude. And again, playing them on the road, you know, Georgia kind of drew the short straw when it comes to these games and really all of their big games being on the road. This is a worthy number one team, in my opinion. Now, Georgia, I think, will have a chance to win this game, but they've got to play their best game of the year. And again, as we talked about a few minutes ago, have to have a complete game on both sides, because I even think if one side of the ball has its best game and the other one is average, I don't think that's good enough to beat this Texas team.
Do we think that there's a, because you mentioned it at the start with Texas, I mean, this is by far the biggest game they've played this year. Michigan is a fraud. Oklahoma's had so many injuries that you can't count them on two fingers and two toes. I mean, it 2 feet, I guess. But this is the biggest game for Texas in a long time, and really the biggest one of the year. If they win it, the back half of their schedule, while it does look dangerous, it's not bad by any means. That any concern that they can't get up for a game like this? I don't know.
I don't know about getting up for it, but I think you get a better sense of just how good this team is. Now, you know, I think Georgia's fully capable, as I said, Mingo, of winning this game, but you know, this is a very dangerous Texas team. I want to see how Quinn Ewers plays. I want to see, you know, Georgia tried to be really aggressive against Jalen Milroe in that first quarter and tried to bring pressure and tried to really get after him and didn't do a very good job of it. You know, Georgia has to make Quinn Ewers uncomfortable. They got to get after him, even if it just means moving him out of the pocket or making him move around. I don't know if I'm necessarily concerned with, hey, this is Texas's biggest game. Are they up for the challenge? Are they going to be able to meet the moment? As much as, okay, we got a pretty good sense from the sample size we got of how good Texas is. And I do think they're very good, and I do think that they're playoff caliber. But this is their toughest opponent yet. Are they as good as we all think they are and that the numbers so far show they are? They have to show that they are quite obviously the number one team in the country. We'll get a better sense of just how talented this team is when they go up against Georgia.
I'll tell you one thing, doesn't happen very often. Georgia, an underdog in this game against Texas. Yes, it's on the road, but correct me if I'm wrong here, weren't they a favorite when they went to Tuscaloosa a few weeks ago?
Yeah, the last time, Jacob, that Georgia was an underdog, by the time the game kicked off, Clemson season opener 2021, they were a 2.5-point underdog there. So, and Georgia won that game, so I don't know if that is a sign of what's to come or not. But yeah, they were a favorite, I think maybe about a 3-point favorite in Tuscaloosa. And I will say this, that Kirby Smart and the players have talked about it and said, you know, we don't get caught up in the underdog status or not being the betting favorite. We're worried about what we got to do and trying to go out there and put together our best game yet.
How about that? Top five matchup in Austin. And, I mean, this game, you can't put it into words just how much of an impact it has on the college football playoff, on the SEC title race, on what the back half of college football is going to look like. All eyes will be on Austin, Texas come Saturday night. Number one, Longhorns, and the number five, Bulldogs. Jordan, before we let you go really quickly here, want to hit on basketball for a second, since we did have the SEC Basketball Media Day in Birmingham yesterday. What'd you hear from Mike White and the two players he brought with him about the upcoming Georgia basketball season?
Well, you know, Mike talked about what I think is going to be the most fascinating part of the conference play this year is just how deep the league is. And at one point, Mike said that he thinks double-digit teams from the SEC will make the NCAA tournament. And I think he's right. I mean, it's just super deep. And then you consider Texas coming in as well as Oklahoma. And really fascinated to follow this Georgia team. You know, I had them ninth in my preseason SEC ranking. I think that the voters at Media Day have them 12th. I do think that they're going to be able to break through and finally make the NCAA tournament again. But, man, it's hard to just look at the schedule and say, okay, there's a for sure win in conference play. Oh, you feel good about this game. This conference is going to be super, super deep, and it's going to be hard. And I think even Bruce Pearl said there's going to be a lot of teams beating up on each other in conference play. So Georgia's excited. I think they feel good about this group that they've assembled, five transfers, four high school signees, the biggest one being five-star forward Asa Newell. They've got a lot to be excited about. Wins are going to be hard to come by, but I think Mike White and the staff feel pretty good about this group. And they're hoping that his third year as a head coach at Georgia winds up being his most productive.
You mentioned Asa Newell, and he could be the answer. It could be a different guy. Nine newcomers, right? Five transfers, four high school. What's a name or who's the name that other fans in the SEC need to know going into this season?
Well, the guy I would look at is a guy that I think a lot of folks in the SEC already knew, and that's Tyron Lawrence from Vanderbilt, a guy that's a very experienced SEC player. I want to say he was at Vanderbilt for 4 years. Not sure exactly what role he's going to play. I think he's got a good opportunity to be the shooting guard alongside sophomore point guard Silas Demery Jr., but I think it was incredibly valuable to bring in Tyron, a guy that knows what it takes to play SEC basketball night after night. Getting him was huge, especially with Georgia still having a pretty young backcourt around him. I think he's got a chance to have a really productive season. And he has not been in the NCAA tournament either. And I know we talked to him last week. He's excited to try to make that happen. And we'll see if he's able to make it happen as a Bulldog.
Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He's with us every Wednesday here on ESPN 106.7, talking all things Georgia athletics. Man, enjoy your trip. Safe travels to Austin. And I'm being told you got to go to Black's Barbecue in Austin. That's from one of our listeners who lives out there. Black's Barbecue in Austin is apparently the place to go. So if you do make it by there, you'll have to let us know how it goes.
Yeah, I'll make sure and write it down and get to try it. And Jacob, since you won't be out there, I'll have enough for both of us. I figure that's the least I can do.
Wow, that's so kind of you. And you're always kind with your time as well, which we really do appreciate. Man, safe travels there. Enjoy covering what should be a fantastic football game. And we'll have you on the show again next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jake.
That's Jordan Hill of Dogs247. Go check him out, dogs247.com, for all of the Georgia coverage that you could want, football, basketball, anything. If you're just looking for more information on what Georgia's going on or what they have going on, go to one place, dogs247.com. We'll take our final break, come back, wrap up hour number one, throw ourselves into hour number two, and a reminder, Daryl Dapperidge from Locked On Auburn joins us at 3:15, so between now and then, you can get in on the phone lines. 334-321-1390.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up the first hour here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Shout out Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Always enjoy talking with him. And now we're getting into a crossover season, right? We got football still heading into the backstretch and college basketball right around the corner. And look, I'm with Jordan. All right, I think this Georgia basketball team will be disrespected. I think they will be underrated. I think they are very, very talented, though. And I think Mike White's a great head coach. He knows how to win. He's coached in the SEC. He knows what's up. And I got a lot of backlash when I said that I was excited for Georgia to be good at basketball again, but just add that to the echelon of teams that are playing in this conference. Add that to the group of teams that represent what I think is a top two conference in college basketball. I think it rivals the Big East. I really do. I think the Big Ten has a lot of question marks this year. I think the Big 12 will be sneaky good with a lot of those teams in there that you don't think about all the time in basketball, but I think they'll be better. And then you do have a lot of the, you know, smaller conferences that ACC is terrible. I'm sorry. It's just bad. I mean, you have two or three good teams, and it's like football. I'm putting the same ACC is the same thing in football as it is in basketball, maybe even a little bit worse in football. You have one or two teams that have carried that conference for the last how many years? And not a whole lot comes from it. That's kind of how I feel about that. But I do think Georgia will be a really good basketball team. So go check Jordan out at dogs247.com. Hey, in case you have not heard, coming up tomorrow, not on my show, but The Drive, those guys are going to be live. They're going to be live downtown for tip-off at Toomers. And while it's not, I guess, not for tip-off at Toomers, they're going to be at the new Graduate Hotel downtown. You know where that's at? That big, super nice hotel they just built? Yeah, the boys are going to be down there tomorrow from 4 to 6 with that, and they're going to have a lot of fun. So go check them out tomorrow if you're looking for something to do before you go to tip-off at Toomers. The Drive is on location tomorrow at the Graduate downtown Auburn before tip-off at Toomers, so be sure that you check them out. All right, hour number one is in the book. Stick around. Hour number two coming up. We'll have a short segment to start the second hour. And then Daryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn joins me from 3:15 to 3:45. We're talking football, talking basketball. Who knows what we're going to get into? Double D's the best. Stick around. Hour number two coming up.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of the show. We post it on our station website each and every day. That is ESPNAU.com. You can find the podcast there of our show, The Drive. You'll also find our SEC football challenges on there. So be sure you're getting your picks in for that each and every week. Even if you haven't played all season long, good thing is we do weekly prizes there. So you can go and fill out your picks for the SEC games each and every week on our SEC Football Challenge, ESPNAU.com, that is presented by the Orthopedic Clinic, Johnny Brusco's New York Style Pizza, and University Ace Hardware. They provide a weekly prize every single week, and then there is a grand prize winner at the very end. So go and get your picks in. They're due Fridays at midnight, and you can find all of that on our station website. It's also, again, where our podcast is. And in hour number one, if you missed anything, you can listen to that. We talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Got a lot of good updates on Georgia football as they get ready to take on Texas this weekend. in Austin. First time they've been an underdog since they played Clemson in the season opener in 2021. So a pretty big game going on between number one and number five. We also got some basketball updates from Jordan as well. So had that. Also talked about the Dan Lanning rule that is now in place in college football, thanks to the NCAA deciding to act quickly. I don't know. Never seen it before. So I had that in the first hour. Also talked about Denver Jones taking a new role with Auburn basketball. So all of that in hour number one. Here in hour number two, we're going to get to the phone lines in about 10 minutes because Daryl Dapprich, Double D, will be joining us as he does every Wednesday, 3:15 to 3:45. Him and I have a lot to talk about. Coming out of the bye week for Auburn, what we can or should expect to see this weekend versus Missouri, who what needs to happen, what changes need to be made, all that sort of stuff. We also need to talk some basketball since SEC Media Day was yesterday. We'll get his thoughts on the Tigers as they get ready to start the season. They announced a new charity exhibition game against Furman that's coming up here soon. So we'll get all of that and more from Daryl Dapprich coming up in about 10 minutes. And until then, the phone lines are open. You can be a part of the show. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Give me a call. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about on this Wednesday afternoon? You can also shoot me a text in our on-the-line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. And before we get into content, want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day, here during On the Line on ESPN, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the second hour each and every day during my show here on ESPN Radio. Well, lots to get to because I want to keep going into this basketball thing. I drug the ACC coming out of the first hour, and there were people who were upset that I was dragging the ACC in the first hour, and I guess I can get back to that. Got a text. All right, let's talk about ACC and basketball now. This is the basketball. It says the ACC had four out of the Sweet 16 and three out of the Elite Eight last year. Meanwhile, the SEC only had two of the Sweet 16 and two out of the eight in the Elite Eight. Both had one in the Final Four. And while that is correct, okay, it was a pretty good year for the ACC. It was, right? It was a pretty good performance for ACC basketball. Better than we've seen in quite some time, I'll give credit to. And what's crazy there is we keep talking about an ACC that has just changed so much over the years, right? And continues to change. Continues to change year after year after year. I mean, we're talking about a league right now that has all sorts of new names and new faces in it. All sorts of them. But in terms of last year, okay, you do have the Virginias of the world. You do have Clemson, who I do think got better as the year went on. NC State, when they decide to be good, which hit or miss, but when they're good, right? And they've had some really good teams, really, really good teams. Syracuse is in there. I put, and I'm not talking Duke and North Carolina. I want to separate that for a second here. Duke and North Carolina, right? Duke and North Carolina, Miami, obviously. Auburn's been at the hands of that, right? We know exactly how that goes. And this is also in a time, and this is what baffles me here, is when Louisville has been so bad. Louisville's been terrible for a handful of years now. And they're still trying to figure it out. And once they do, that will bring up the reputation. Is that the right word I'm looking for? The reputation of what the ACC can bring. And while this is correct, I just feel that time and time again, the SEC continues to get better in the ACC. And again, talking college basketball here, just kind of stay stagnant. Big East is always really good. That's my favorite basketball conference outside of the SEC because just of how historic it is and just how fun that league is. But then outside of that, it's like, okay, you start looking outside the Big East, you start looking outside the SEC, then what? You could put the ACC up there if they continue to have consistency there. I think that's a big question mark there in that conference in terms of getting into the tournament and having tournament success, which they did a year ago, right? SEC has struggled with that. Big Ten has struggled with that. Big East, they've got, you know, all they have is a back-to-back national champion. That's fine. And then the Big 12 is one that I am just fascinated to see what happens here. Because new teams like Cincinnati and UCF and those types, BYU are in that conference. They were a year ago, but I'm saying they're still getting acclimated to that. But they also lost Texas and Oklahoma, who, no, didn't have overly successful seasons a year ago, but historically are pretty consistent NCAA tournament teams. What does that look like this year? Outside of Houston, who is the best team right now, I think, or one of, you can make an argument, right? Houston is phenomenal. That was one of the best additions in terms of college basketball. I want to talk about this for a second. In terms of additions and all this conference realignment and all the changing of teams and conferences and whatever, was there any better basketball addition than Houston to the Big 12? I'm talking teams that have moved into the ACC, moved into the SEC, have moved into the Big Ten. I mean, UCLA could be up there in terms of the Big Ten. Could be. Not right now, not yet, but could be. Texas and Oklahoma could be for the SEC. But man, Houston going to the Big 12 was such a big move and boosts the reputation and the resume of that conference significantly. You take out Houston from the Big 12, and a year ago they had a really good Iowa State team, a Baylor team that was solid, a Texas Tech team that was solid, BYU, Kansas is obviously in there. And then I think you start to see a little bit of a drop-off. So shout out to the Big 12. Can they stay relevant? Can they stay relevant in terms of teams competing at the top? I think they can, but I think in terms of a conference that's just got the most depth, I think the SEC may have everybody. Now, there's still a couple of teams in that Big East conference that are not very good, but there's very few teams in the SEC that are not very good. All right, let's get to a break. We got to get Daryl Dapperich in here coming up in just a few minutes. We're going to talk Auburn football. We're going to talk Auburn basketball. Again, with SEC Media Day yesterday, want to ask Daryl and talk to him about the comments from Bruce Pearl, expectations on this team, exhibition games that are coming up, and then we'll talk about Auburn football coming out of the bye week as they take on Missouri, a team that people have claimed is beatable. We'll have all that for you when Daryl Dapperich joins us coming up next here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
On the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
It's that time. It's that time. Wednesdays at 3:15, we welcome in what has become a fan favorite, Daryl Dapperich from Locked On Auburn and all the different outlets that he is a part of now. He joins us on the phone lines. Daryl, great to hear from you, my man. I hope you're doing well.
Man, it's good to talk to you, and coming off a bye week, we're obviously not talking about the game that happened Saturday, but I'm looking forward to talking a lot Auburn football and basketball with you.
Well, there's plenty to talk about, my friends, and I think it's appropriate that we talk about basketball first because of SEC Media Day being yesterday in Birmingham. We've got preseason rankings. We've got preseason polls. We've got predictions. I mean, we got exhibition games scheduled. I mean, we got all sorts of things happening around Auburn basketball, and I want to start with what was said yesterday in Birmingham for the SEC Media Day. Just your takeaways on what Bruce Pearl had to say about previewing for his team coming up this season.
You know, I've been fortunate. I've heard Bruce speak twice in the last month. Once about a month ago here in Montgomery at a function, a banquet, and he was a little bit very candid. We even talked a little bit afterwards. I think the thing that struck me, first of all, was, you know, the first two questions are about Kentucky and Alabama, which is ridiculous to me. I'm just going, this is a man who has built the program like no one else does. He's one of the most successful SEC coaches. I get people want to know about Mark Pope and Calipari, you know, leaving and going to Arkansas. I get people want to talk about the state of Alabama and where it is with basketball, the actual physical state. But, you know, it got around to like question three before they started even talking about his team, his schedule, that kind of thing. So I think the things that struck me as far as the questions he answered was, you know, I have been saying all along, and I'm so glad he says it, and it's almost like a little bit of a warning shot or a heads up or just, you know, letting fans know that this year needs to be viewed completely different than a lot of basketball seasons are viewed since Bruce Pearl started having success. Auburn, I remember a few years ago, was like 14-0, 15-0. I mean, they won their first – they didn't lose a non-conference game. They won their first three SEC games. I think this was like 2020, before COVID hit. The Isaac Okoro team, and then Florida and Alabama beating them back-to-back. But that team, as you remember, Jacob, was getting really hot at the end of the year.
That team was good.
Oh, it was so good. But, you know, a lot of these years, Auburn's gone into conference play like with one loss.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people need to understand and keep perspective and really try to know ball in this scenario and understand that if Auburn goes into SEC play with seven or eight losses or six losses, don't panic. Don't start with the stupid rhetoric and the narratives about this and Bruce Pearl and that and – you know, first it was a football team, and now it's the – I want people to understand. I think Bruce Pearl, you know, that's what he is saying is we could lose 8-9 games before we get into the conference and be really, really good. And once you get into the conference, they're going to beat each other up. I mean, you look at the rankings, you look at KenPom and other things, and this is a brutal schedule. It's a brutal year. The SEC is as good as it's ever been, especially adding Texas and Oklahoma. So I want fans to have patience. I think Bruce Pearl is preaching that. He's trying to kind of give a heads up that, hey, it's not what it seems. Don't panic. Don't get concerned if the non-conference record going into conference play looks different than it does years past. But I do believe he really likes his team, and that came through. The second thing that was very interesting to me was how he talked about Denver Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about the point guard position. And
I
that's
love
something
this.
That's been a common theme that I'm a little bit concerned about. And not concerned about Denver Jones, concerned that J.P. Pegues is not getting as much run or talk. And he was brought to be point guard one. He was brought in to be point guard one. And I don't, you know, I hope he picks it up. And I hope by, you know, a portion of the season he is that. He is the starting point guard. But moving Denver Jones over there, we're trying to figure out if that's an indication of how good Denver Jones is or if Pegues just isn't where he's supposed to be yet. And that would be the only other thing that I think would be a question mark going into the season, besides what we'll talk about later, another position on the floor.
Well, two things here. One, I am with you on the whole losses thing and non-conference schedule, and I do want to make it clear to Auburn fans, there's a – like. Losses are not cool. We're not saying that be okay with losses, but there's a difference in losing to Houston or Purdue or Ohio State or Duke compared to losing to App State. Like, there's two differences there. Like, that's you're not comparing two equals. And so while it's expected that this Auburn team has a loss or two or three or four or five heading into conference play, I'm on the side, Darryl, in terms of Denver Jones. I actually talked about this a little bit today before you came on. I think that's a sign that Denver Jones is just that dude. I think he's just that good. And I called for Denver to play the one quite a bit last year because every time he did, the offense seemed to flow a lot better with him at the helm. And I loved the whole quarterback quote that Bruce Pearl has saying, "Now I don't have to run a play to get it to my quarterback. He's going to have the ball in his hands every single time."
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that about the losses. I am not into moral victories or accepting things.
Good losses.
I hate that term. I'm saying that if Auburn loses three games, and I'm looking at, like, you know, the Houston game, the Iowa State game, the Duke game, Ohio State, Purdue, if and then whatever happens in the Maui Classic, if Auburn loses three or four of those games, Auburn's going to be ranked in the top 10. Going into the conference play. I mean, that's just a fact, because that means they'll have beaten some good teams too.
Right.
So that's why I want people to, you know, keep perspective. I mean, be realistic. No, I don't, you know, Auburn loses to Richmond, or they lose to Vermont, or they lose to somebody they shouldn't lose to. I don't think they should lose to Ohio State. I think that Ohio State game should be a win. Ohio State's not ranked. They're playing in Atlanta. I would say Auburn should be favored in that game. So, no, I'm not. You know, I just think that it's going to look a little different. So I'm glad you said that. And the Denver Jones thing, yeah, it may just be a case of him elevating his game so much that it's just hard. But again, couldn't he do that at the two guard? But Bruce Pearl knows where he needs Denver Jones most, and I'll just trust him. And if it's at the one because he wants the ball in his hand, like he mentioned at the press conference, he's like the quarterback. So you want to hit the ball in his hand the most. He can go downhill and score. He can shoot threes and score. He's a great perimeter shooter. He can drive, dribble drive. Remember, Auburn has had some really, really good point guards that could shoot it, and they were very successful when they did. And so when they had guys that were some of their best three-point shooters from the one, from the point guard position, like Jared Harper. Now, Sharif Cooper, not so much, but he was a scorer. He could score. He could slash. He could do all kinds of different things. Good distributor too. So I'm okay with that. I mean, because then you can slide Miles Kelly to the two. You've got Pettiford backing up. You've got Pegues packing up. You've got Chad Baker-Mazzara at the three. You got Jaheim Hudson, you know, at the four. You got Chris Moore. You've got a ton of options. So your backcourt will still look good because you got four dudes that you could rotate in and out at any given position. You know, you got three ones, three twos, four wings. Yeah. Jakai Howard's another one. Man, the versatility's off the charts. It really is.
Well, a good way to continue this conversation is to bring up the fact that you have a poll going on right now on your X page at DAP6410. And the question states, which Auburn basketball player, besides Jahni Broome, is the most crucial to the success of the team? And the four options you gave your fans were Denver Jones, J.P. Pegues, Chad Baker-Mazzara, and Miles Kelly. But I have a feeling that your answer isn't one of those four, and I'm going to take a stab and say your answer is Dylan Cardwell.
No, but great guess. I'm a sneaky little joker. I didn't want anyone taking mine, so I didn't put it up there. And from the wow factor of talking to you and the Locked On Auburn podcast that dropped this morning, mine is Chaney Johnson.
Okay.
And the reason why is because if you look at the other four positions on the floor, I just mentioned you've got multiple options of success. You have the point guard position where you have two or three guys that can get it done. The two guard, two or three guys that can get it done. The three position, the wings, you've got Howard and Kelly and Chad Baker-Mazzara. You got two guys at the five that can get it done, and Broome and Cardwell. The question mark seems to be the four position. Chaney Johnson, Jaheim Hudson, the transfer from SMU. That's where there's like not a definitive. Now, Chaney Johnson improved. He played well when Jalen Williams got hurt. What I'm saying is he needs to show an absolute, move upwards. He needs to show improvement. And if he does that, and I'm not talking about, he doesn't have to be all SEC. He doesn't have to be even the third or fourth best player on the team. If Chaney Johnson can play 16 to 18 minutes, give you 8 points a game, 6 rebounds a game, and shows improvement and shows a little bit of a rise compared to his game last year, Auburn will be able to achieve a lot of its lofty goals, because you got Jaheim Hudson coming off the bench that could give you 4 or 5 points a game, 6 points a game, not out of the realm, and he's a very good rebounder. So now you're looking at, Jacob, what the actual four position gives you. It's not about a player. It's about what a position can give you. And if you combine stats and you get 10 points, 11 points a game, and 8 rebounds from the four position, you're cooking with gas. But that starts with Chaney Johnson. And I think he's the most integral. We can talk about all these other players, but if he steps up his game and gives Auburn more than what he gave them last year and continues to have the maturation process and continues to improve, I think that's crucial, because I think everybody else, because, you talked about, people have talked about Broome playing the four some.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why would that conversation even be considered unless you felt like you needed more production out of the four?
That's a good point. That's a really good point. Of the 550 people that have voted on your X poll, 38% have Chad Baker-Mazzara, 28% have Denver Jones, 18% say J.P. Pegues, and 16% say Miles Kelly, who, according to the guys on the team, is the best shooter, and they're comparing the guy to Stephen Curry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious now. I want to know who Jacob Goins' choice is. Who's your choice?
My choice is Denver Jones. It is. Denver because of him making that move. And that my answer probably changed from yesterday to today. But with the confirmation that Denver Jones is playing point guard, just think about the Auburn teams that have been the most successful is when they have elite point guard play. And there have been several teams where that has been cut short because of COVID or NCAA restrictions or whatever the case may be, right? Really good teams that had really good guards that just didn't get a chance to be what they could have been in March. And so if Denver Jones is the point guard that I think he can be and be the, quote, quarterback that Auburn basketball needs and get it to all those other playmakers, that's what will make Auburn the best, and that's why I think Denver Jones is the most crucial to Auburn's success this season. We could talk basketball for the next 2 hours if we wanted to, but we got some football things to talk about. Auburn coming out of the bye week, and they head to Missouri. We'll talk about that with Daryl Dapperich from Locked On Auburn after this.
On the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and we got about 15 minutes or so left with Daryl Dapperich from Locked On Auburn. And man, you're all over the place. I tell people like you, I can't keep up because you guys have so much going on each and every day, pumping out fantastic content.
Yeah, we really have. Wednesdays and Fridays, wherever you get your podcast, I'm on with Zach Blackerby, Locked On Auburn. Then we do a live show immediately after the football games. Zach does it by himself if it's a home game, because you and I are covering the press conference and all that.
Are.
But if it's a road game now, I've been able to jump on right when the game's over, do the live show with him, and then we do a wrap-up, what they call reaction show, that drops Sunday morning. I write some articles that we put in the message board and community notes, thebarnauburn.com, and then just some various radio appearances during the week that I really enjoy speaking with different hosts, which has been a lot of fun.
Well, as much fun and as much as I would love to sit here and talk more college basketball, we're going to have plenty of opportunities to do that starting in just the next couple of weeks with some of the exhibitions, Auburn announcing the one against Furman coming up, and then the start of the regular season. But we still do have football to talk about, Daryl. I know people have forgotten that. There is still football to get to with Auburn as they come out of the bye week, right, 2-4, using it as a reset. They've changed up the practice schedule and routine, whatever. They go and play Missouri this weekend, where the line is a lot closer than I thought it was going to be. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, it's a little bit closer. You know, you think about what Auburn's done. Other than the Georgia game, they've been in every game. You know, of course, Georgia was the first road game.
Right.
It should have been. But they've been. It's been one-score games. They've blown leads late, or they couldn't hold on, or couldn't come back, or self-inflicted stuff. So it'll be interesting to see. I think this is one of those games that early in the year you put down a loss, but you know, I thought the Arkansas game was a W, the Cal game was a W. Those aren't. So maybe you can flip the script a little bit. Maybe you come out of the bye week reset mentally, physically, and you go and steal one on the road against a Missouri team that's maybe not as good as people thought. But Auburn's just going to have to show me, which is ironic on who they're playing and what state it is. I think I don't trust this team until they show me that they can win a close game and get over the hump. Now, that being said, my feeling is once they do, they're going to take off. I just, again, I may need to get my head checked. I'm not a sunshine pumper. I'm not a homer. I'm a realist. But Auburn is close. They've lost some games because they've done stupid things, whether it's mental errors or physical errors or turning the ball over. Auburn's close, in my opinion, and the production is there. They start hitting on some of these plays and learning to finish and close drives and maybe simplify a little bit and give the rock to freaking Jarquez Hunter, who needs to touch it more than an average of 13 times a game, which is where he's at through six games, and up that to 20. And if Auburn can get out of, you know, Columbia and steal one at Missouri and start feeling good about themselves and taste a little success and realize they can close, in my opinion, I think that could springboard them to winning enough games to go to a bowl game. I just do. I think that the Kentucky game takes on a whole new, you know, thing, and then the Vanderbilt game at home, and you got La Monroe, and I mean, I know A&M's tougher, but I mean, let's be honest. We all thought at the beginning of the year the Iron Bowl would be a blowout. I'm not feeling that right now. I'm not.
I'm not thinking.
I know Alabama's a better football team than Auburn, but I think there's some cracks that I'm seeing in that football team. They were lucky to get out of there with a win against South Carolina. That game doesn't necessarily smell blowout anymore. So Auburn needs to get the first one. Once they get the first one, I think that could springboard them into getting a little bit of confidence and going on a little bit of a run. And if that happens, then it'll be one of those situations where people will say, it's a good thing we got Auburn early, or no one wants to play Auburn now. You know, 4-win Auburn as they win a couple games, 5-win Auburn. You got to get the first one, though. If you don't get the first one, then it's just more of the same.
The way I've described it, Daryl, is that this team has to learn how to win. There's so many young players that don't know how to win in college football, and they don't know what losing is. And that's not from me. That's from talking to guys on the team. And they're telling
that's
me this.
That's the difference, though. It's not – you make a great point. The younger guys are not used to losing. And so to learn how to win, that's all they've ever known. Now they've got to translate that to the college game, but they need the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think you start playing some of the younger guys.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm not – now, there's certain guys that are untouchable. I'd leave KLS alone. I'd leave Hunter alone. I'd leave Fairweather alone. I'd leave the offensive line alone. But guys like Riddick and Caleb Harris
– I was going to ask about the defense, yeah.
Yep, and Malcolm Simmons, more snaps, more targets. But I agree with you 100%. Some of these guys are frustrated because they don't know what it's like to lose like this.
Well, I know that you are a very in-depth and honest person, and in terms of what Missouri is going to bring on Saturday, from what you've seen so far this season, as they are the home team, short favorite, small favorite, I guess, 11 a.m. kick, they're in Como. What do you expect Missouri to bring to the table against Auburn offensively and defensively?
Offensively, they're very balanced. So, I mean, they can run it and throw it. They're potent. They're going to put points up on the board. I think they're going to have – Auburn's going to have opportunities to finally get on the positive end of the turnover ledger because they put it up so much. But I think Missouri – you ain't beating Missouri unless you get in the 30s, in my opinion. I just – now, Auburn may give the defensive performance of their life, hold them in the 20s, sack their quarterback a ton, you know, get some interceptions, whatever. I have to see that to believe it because there's been no trend there. But their defense is susceptible. People have put points up. The tight end against Missouri has seemed to be something that people could utilize. They give up yards on the ground. They've given up yards. I think Boston College only got 24 points, and then after that, other teams started getting more than that. You know, Vanderbilt scored more. I mean, they're giving up some points. There's going to be some offensive opportunities there if Auburn wants to capitalize and not shoot itself in the foot with stalling on drives. I'm not saying a shootout. I do believe Auburn's defense is getting better, and I have a feeling that Auburn's defense is going to be a little bit more opportunistic Saturday, and these young guys are just getting better and better. But, yeah, you're going to have to – they're balanced, and Missouri's balanced, and in just my opinion, you're going to have to get into the 30s to beat them, which Auburn has not been able to do other than A&M and New Mexico, right? I mean, they just against
the
Power Fives or Power Fours, they have been able to. You've got to, unless you, like I said, give the defensive performance of your life and you get some turnovers and flip short fields, I think Auburn, you know, that's the blueprint. That's the template to get the upset Saturday in Columbia.
Do you have confidence in them to get in the 30s, Darryl? I mean,
I mean, I haven't seen it yet. I can tell my children that, man, I just have confidence that you're going to be an astronaut. But if they're getting 16 or 17 on the ACTs,
you're not calling them out truthfully on the radio right now, are you?
But by the way, my kids never did. Never wanted to be astronauts and never got 16 or. But that's what I'm saying. I mean,
right.
We can wish it, hope it, have confidence all we want, but there's got to be some data to back it up.
Sure.
There's got to be precedence. And so, again, I keep going back to that. It could happen at any time. There's always a first, right? There's always that first time. It's got to be that first. There has to be that first time. Once Auburn does it, and once they break through offensively, I think it could, you know, I think about like last night. Okay, a game on a smaller scale. Battle for the belt. South Alabama and Troy.
Yes.
South Alabama's 2-4. Troy is 1-5. Troy has beat South Alabama 60 times in a row. Well, it just took one game. South Alabama and Troy's got a pretty good defense. South Alabama finally put points up on the board. Now, they didn't get into the 30, but they finally – so they were 2-4. You know, I mean, it sometimes the flip of the switch can happen just – really quick. And once you do it, and once it happens, it springboards you. So am I confident they can? I mean, I guess. I mean, I've seen Stranger Things, and all it takes is that first time. But until they do, you're not going to burn me again. I'm not going to trust you again. I'm not going to be played the fool again. But once they do, it's there. The components are there. The template is there. The blueprint's there. Do it. If you do it that one time, I think it could completely change the course of Auburn's season. I'm telling you, if they go on the road and beat Missouri Saturday, this season will look completely different than when people thought it was going to look a week ago.
So it sounds like to me Saturday's a prove-it game for Auburn. That's what it is. It's a prove that you can do it. We've seen the tools. We've seen what we think is a successful system. You literally just have to execute. And I know Hugh Freeze has a quote talking about how it would be highly disappointing and infuriating again if this team can't execute. I mean, you've done it all. You just got to flat out do it, Darryl.
Well, I take that comment with a grain of salt because, yeah, I get that. But it's also infuriating that you're giving Jarquez Hunter the ball 13 times a game. If you want to go that route.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm not being ugly, but, you know, and that's what I would have done. If I was at the press conference, I'd have raised my hand and said, I get what you're saying, but what would you say about the fans that say it's infuriating that Hunter's not touching the ball enough? I mean, you know, that's the kind of question I would ask. I want to hear what he says. Yeah, it's infuriating, but maybe execution can be got begotten by you giving the ball to the best running back in the SEC just six more times a game. Because you and I know, as we were walking underneath the boughs of Jordan-Hare Stadium with Auburn clinging to a five-point lead against Oklahoma, we heard two large roars.
Yep.
And we thought the game was over because Jarquez Hunter was running it down Oklahoma's throat about to ice the football game. Then we got cute, started throwing it, and we all know what happened after that. You still run it and kick the field goal and have an eight-point lead there, I'm still convinced Oklahoma doesn't win that game. And Hunter was having his way with Oklahoma, having his way with them. I mean, and it was like we're walking, we hear roar. I'm like, oh, Auburn just scored. That's how loud it was. Well, 27-yard run, 15-yard run. I'm thinking, I look at you, and I'm like, they're icing the game. They're putting the game away. And then they change. So execution sometimes is about the coaches executing too and maybe not going away from what's absolutely working and he's eating and just keep feeding him. So, yeah, I get the execution thing, but let's also execute giving the ball to the best back in the SEC six or seven more times, see how that works out. I'm not advocating the Gus Malzahn. I'm going to give it to Trey Mason 40 times and Kerryon Johnson for 40 times.
Right.
Because there needs to be a little bit of balance there. I do get the whole, because I am one of those people that felt like Stidham could have had a lot more of a role in 2017, meaning once Kerryon Johnson got hurt against Alabama and couldn't play effectively against Georgia or Central Florida, Auburn had nothing to fall back on.
They were done.
And had they had the Jared Stidham that lit up Purdue in the Music City Bowl and at least had some balance, maybe they could have gotten into the college football playoff by beating Georgia. But once Kerryon Johnson, because that you rode him. You rode him the whole year once he got hurt. So I get the balance thing. I get not putting your eggs all in one basket, but put more eggs in the Jarquez Hunter basket is what I'm saying. He's your best player, and I think he's hungry and he's fresh. And my God, is he going to be fresh with only touching the ball 13 times a game and coming off a bye week. He may go for 150 or 160 against Missouri. It may be like that
prediction.
Vanderbilt game. Yeah, it may be like that Vanderbilt game last year on the road where he just ate and went off. I can see that coming. I really can. I can see him having a not just – but you give him the ball 20 or 22 times, I can see him going for a buck 50 Saturday.
I think Auburn needs it. I think they could use every bit of that this weekend as they go to Missouri. Before we let you go, Darryl, big games around college football in the SEC this weekend, highlighted, of course, Bama, Tennessee, and Georgia and Texas. Your thoughts on what's been a crazy week, crazy season so far?
Very crazy. Tennessee's not who I thought they were. Should have blown out Florida, and then when the game got played, they should have lost. I mean, I think on paper before the game, they were very lucky to win that game against Florida. A&M, a lot better than I thought they were. Texas is exactly who I thought they were. Georgia, a little bit below the high water mark. Same with Alabama. The Alabama-Tennessee game is the pretender contender bowl. Loser goes home and has no chance to go into the playoff. Winner keeps their playoff hopes alive. If Georgia loses to Texas, they're done, in my opinion, as far as getting into the playoff. Maybe a two-loss Georgia team gets in, but, you know, and then I think that Ole Miss is exactly what I thought Ole Miss was. You know, Georgia, Alabama, Texas bravado with a Vanderbilt trophy case. Well, I can't say that anymore. Vanderbilt's trophy case may get better after this year. Say a Swanee. I'll say a Swanee trophy case
there
from
you
back
go.
In the day.
But, there you go.
But, yeah, I mean, Ole Miss has lost two games. I mean, they're probably going to lose three or four.
Crazy, you know, isn't it?
They are who we thought they were.
Frauds.
In the mortal words of Dennis Green.
There you go. I love it. Darryl, we appreciate your time, my man. As always, this is and I'm not just saying this. It's a fan favorite. I get text every week about how they enjoy you being on the show and everything you have to say. And it's always a blast. I look forward to having you on for 30 minutes each and every Wednesday. Plug it all one more time, my friend. Tell people where they can
find
you.
Well, I want to say this before I get off. This is something just – people that don't understand this, it goes above sports. If you get an opportunity, and I know this is close to your heart, Google, anybody out there, Google the Johnny Gaudreau tribute last night in Columbia. You don't have to be a hockey fan. You just have to be a human being with the heart. But just, you know, the stories out there. But Google the video and the way the Columbus Blue Jackets honored him and his family last night. And if you don't get emotional, I'd rather plug that, to be honest with you. It's special. I know it's close to your heart, but that's something in sports that it, you know, it goes above sports, and it's something worth viewing, trust me.
Yeah, and to have a friend of his who came to Columbus and then scored last night in their home opener, their home debut, pointed to the banner that the Blue Jackets hung. I mean, it was really a heart-wrenching moment, and it does hit home. I mean, I was an hour from Columbus. I've been to 30 Blue Jackets games in my lifetime. I mean, that was something that it's what reminds us, Daryl, that sports are bigger than the sport that's played on the field, on the ice, on the court, whatever the case may be. I mean, that was a really good moment last night.
A lot of toxicity and a lot of vitriol in sports. It's nice to be reminded occasionally of moments like that.
That's right. Daryl, I appreciate you, my friend. And,
all right, brother.
Have a great weekend. I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Take care.
Daryl Dapperge, Locked On Auburn, all sorts of other avenues as well. That's the Daryl you just heard right there at the end. That's the Daryl I know off the air, man. That dude is on it. He's got his priorities straight, that's for sure. And I'm glad that he is in my corner, and hopefully he's glad that I'm in his, because Daryl is an awesome man. He's so fun to have on the show, and he keeps it real. He keeps it a buck, and we really do appreciate him and his time each and every week. We'll take our final break here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Come back and wrap it all up on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. What a great show it's been today. And I say that a lot, I do. But I wouldn't say it if I didn't mean it. And today's has been one of those. We talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, the Georgia 24/7 sports site, back in hour number one. Got all sorts of insight on Georgia football as they get ready to take on the Longhorns this weekend. Also talks to Georgia basketball, too, as they are, of course, getting ready for the start of the season, as is every other team in the SEC. But they had their media day, a part of the SEC, yesterday up in Birmingham. Jordan's got Georgia basketball ranked a little bit higher than some people do, and I don't think that's just because he is a quoted fan or covers them or whatever. I think it's because he covers them, and he knows how good that team can be. So, had that in hour number one. Just got off the phone with Daryl Dapperge of Locked On Auburn and Montgomery radio legend. He is a legend, to say the least. He's so much fun, so real, and always enjoy getting to talk with him for 30 minutes every single Wednesday. Talked football with him, talked a lot of basketball, Auburn basketball, that is, with him. I've talked to basketball today. I talked about Denver Jones and the new role that he's taking with this Auburn men's team. I think it could be crucial to the success of what this team is, and Daryl and I had a conversation about that, and his answer, the player that is the most crucial to Auburn success this year, his answer may surprise you a little bit. And then also the Dan Lanning rule has officially been put into place. So all of that was on the show today. If you missed any of it, be sure that you go and catch it with the podcast. You can find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Our SEC football challenge is there. Be sure you get your picks in for that. We will fill those out together Friday afternoon here on the show. And then coming up tomorrow on the show, Thursdays are wild around here. We'll have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network with us at 2:30. We'll talk about Auburn football going to Missouri. They'll tell you all the broadcast information. It's going to be early now. It's going to be early Saturday morning. So for everybody involved with that, good luck out there in Como, and safe travels to them, of course, as well. And then tomorrow we'll also have Auburn High School's head football coach Keith Etheridge will join us on the phone lines. He'll talk to us about the win over Smith Station last week, 70-6. Talk about some of the other results around Region 2 and 7A high school football, and how the boys are going to Carver on Friday with a chance to clinch the region at the Crampton Bowl. So Coach Keith Etheridge will join us tomorrow at 3 o'clock. And then a guy that has been with me since the beginning, Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, will be with us tomorrow at 3:30, recapping what was a crazy weekend last weekend and what could be an even crazier one this weekend. That's coming up on the show tomorrow. Brad Law, Coach Etheridge, and Chris Gordy That's a stacked lineup for a Thursday, man. That's what you can hear on the show tomorrow, and that's when I'll be back 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Shout out the Orthopedic Clinic for sponsoring the second hour, 3 to 4 p.m. each and every day during On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.